Hi, this is Philip Meyer, welcoming you to another episode of Talking About Platforms.
And we are Daniel Trabucchi
and Thomas Buganza, the co-hosts of this podcast, where we present and discuss relevant discoveries from the field of platform research.
In every episode, we have a guest sharing with us one of his or her latest insights on platforms, starting from a paper, a project, or a book to make it accessible to everyone.
And with that, let's just jump right into the conversation. Welcome to another episode of the Talking About Platforms podcast. My name is Philipp Meyer, and I'm here with my regular co-host, Volker Schlocker. Hi, Volker.
Hi, Philipp. Can't wait for today's episode. Thank you.
And as usual, we have an exciting guest today. And today's guest is Sabine Baumann. Sabine is a professor of digital business and the university vice president at the Berlin School of Economics and Law. She's a scientific director at the Oldenburger Office, Institute for Information Technology, and the editor-in-chief for the IEEE Technology and Engineering Management Society's Leadership Brief. Sabine published edited a handbook for digital business ecosystems published in 2022. And just available for pre-order is her new book that she edited together with Victoria Sledley, and that's called Value Creation in Digital Platforms and Business Ecosystems. Sabine, welcome to the pod.
Thank you for having me.
Sabine, we have a usual opener question, and it's a two-part question, actually, that we ask every guest that comes to the podcast. The first part is, what is a digital platform to you? And the second part, how did you end up studying digital platforms?
Mm-hmm. So a digital platform, or more broadly, a platform for me is an organizational and very often also a technical or technological arrangement that enables interactions. So interactions could be between different groups of people, actors, and the important thing is that the platform is there to facilitate sort of the value creation among these different actors. And for me, what is important, because there are so many different definitions of platforms out there. So I'm a business scholar, as you explained, by nature. So my take will be always sort of from a business or economic perspective, although technology, of course, is an important component here. But I don't come in sort of seeing platforms as purely technological. So I'm very interested in governance structures, for instance, or rules, incentives to get sort of these actors onto the platform. Mm-hmm. And the question is, how did I end up studying platforms? That I'm probably, quite old from the perspective of some of your listeners. So I was there when sort of digital transformation really started. I was working in the media industries, and I can say I know pretty well what happens if you wake up one morning and your business model is essentially gone, because there is a new digital platform. In this case, it was Napster. And that turns your world upside down. And so this questions around digital transformation, digital business models, platforms, sort of has been following my life since the 1990s.
Thank you so much, Sabine. And maybe just diving in there right away with the technology, I think a lot of people on this planet are speaking about at the moment, AI.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about digital transformation, a lot of that stuff, and ICT-driven automation is driven by AI. We have new incarnations that relate to generative AI and so on. So in many ways and in many platform and ecosystem contexts, these technologies reshape how value is created, distributed, and captured. How would you assess the changes that AI drives? And in your view, or your vantage point rather, is generative AI, or best understood as an amplifier of existing trends and dynamics, an accelerator, a disruptor, or all of the above?
Well, I would think it's a little bit of all of the above. So for one thing, of course, AI sort of helps us to automate a lot of things. Also, it's great for scaling certain aspects of platforms. So for instance, you know, it can facilitate how to combine the different actors. But at the same time, I think we cannot overlook or shouldn't overlook that there's also activities in this sphere that are inherently human. So for instance, to negotiate with partners. And, you know, I've been working quite a bit recently, sort of revisiting some older theories like Beaumont's cost disease. Yeah. And one claim a colleague and I are posing is AI, does it sort of solve the cost disease issue? And the answer is no, not completely. Because you still have these like really slow human-dependent processes in the system. And these are quite often overlooked both by scholars, but also by people in the industry that think now AI is the solution for everything and it will help me, you know, to deal with sort of each and every aspect of the process.
Thank you. I think there's a meme circulating on social media, something saying like, oh, I wish AI would do my laundry and not like basically replace me at work.
Yep.
Which, and I recall that Aguillon and others have published in 2017 or so, it was a paper on AI and economic growth. And I think they discussed the Baumol's cost disease and the automation potential. How do you reconcile this with increasing integration or let's say advances in robotics maybe? Would that change for more areas, the Baumol's cost disease, or would you think that this is basically, I mean, the role of humans, right, in certain occupations or contexts? I mean, by the way, I don't know if the listeners know what the Baumol's cost disease is. So Sabine, maybe you can briefly explain what it is before we dive deeper.
Yeah, so Beaumont's claim is essentially, so he was looking at performing and theater. And he was saying, so there's certain industries where the benefits of automations don't work in the same way as they do in other industries. So for instance, if you have a performance of a string quartet, that is sort of the famous example, it will take, you know, the same number of minutes or hours, you know, nowadays than it did back then. But of course, the picture is a bit more nuanced. So first of all, you know, the we now have sort of typically a combination of where you can or where automation or robots, you know, to come back to your questions, can sort of speed up part of the process. But as I was saying earlier, there's other components in the process that you cannot just automate, where you still need the human, where you still need the time for these types of processes. And so the picture is pretty nuanced for this matter. So it's not sort of this one or the other. It really depends on what you're looking at. And so recently I've been looking at some manufacturing ecosystems, and there again it's also balanced, because there are certain physical components that you still need and where you can partly automate, but you cannot fully automate the thing. And so I would say it's, you know, it's a little bit of both. The thing I find intriguing is if we look at the like old and traditional scholars, you know, sometimes, you know, they already explained sort of the mechanisms at work, and some of the mechanisms still hold, even though they work, you know, slightly differently. And I find this intriguing, and I hate it when you like reinvent the wheel without looking at what we already have. And so this is why I find Baumol or others like Rosen with the superstar economics and
absolutely,
so on super fascinating.
Absolutely.
In this context.
I think that's a great reminder for all the listeners, to the young listeners who are not maybe have been confronted in their studies with this literature. I was also, as you were probably confronted with this, and I agree, and I think it is very important to put things in perspective, as you said, automation potential for augmentation versus potential for replacement. what is the role of humans in the loop and what occupation. We have all these labor market effect discussions, reskilling, deskilling, all these things. It's fascinating. And I think it's great that you covered this in this piece. And I think it was a 2024 publication that is highly recommended. Maybe we can link this in the description of the podcast.
Yeah. I joined an event about product management yesterday. And just to add a little anecdote to the conversation, of course, one topic there also was, what is the impact of AI in product management? And there were multiple, like, different experts on stage for this panel. I think they also had a pretty, like, unified perspective that even though there are efficiency gains here and there, it's easier to create a mock-up or a prototype for something. But none of the people said that it now frees up their day because they can, like, create a mock-up or a prototype faster. Now the time freed up is used by, for example, more, what did they say? They need to align more with other colleagues who are also now faster. So, like, improving different parts of the process chain creates bottlenecks and friction in other parts, which then consume more time. So in the, like, zooming out in the aggregate, not much is gained. That, I think, was the takeaway. So,
okay. Yeah. I recently read another article where people, because others were getting faster, they were also getting faster. And so everyone was feeling more pressure than they did. And they were using the free time to work with AI tools even more to catch up with what they felt they were lagging behind. And so it was kind of crazy, again, that this situation where we've, you know, efficiency gains would potentially give us more leisure time. The leisure time is then filled to work even more. But I just read about the study, so it's not one of mine, I have to say.
I know you do a lot of work in manufacturing contexts, industrial contexts, and digital platforms and digital ecosystems, like in these environments. And I also wrote my thesis, PhD thesis, about digital platform business models in B2B contexts. And I think one of the key takeaways of my work at the time was that digital platforms in B2B, particularly in more traditional industrial contexts like manufacturing, logistics, chemistry, they often struggle to create the necessary traction due to potential users and complementers' lack of digital capabilities. Mm-hmm. Right? If you want to connect a machine to a digital platform, but the machine, because it's so old, doesn't have a data plug, you cannot connect the machine to the digital platform, right? Even though the platform is a good idea. Now, coming back to the AI topic and the amplification of AI or potential amplification of AI in platforms and ecosystems, I don't know if you have been looking into this, but this is something that I'm currently thinking of. What is the role of AI in, like, bridging this gap? So is it even, like, reinforcing, let's say, the gap between more, like, traditional companies who lack access due to missing digital capabilities to access the platform and ecosystems? Or is it helping to narrow the gap because the AI just, like, can provide some of the necessary capabilities that weren't there before?
I think that's a super interesting question because, first of all, it's very important to note that there's not just B2C. And I think the B2C models are totally over-researched in many regards. But a lot of the potential also from thinking in ecosystem structures or thinking about technologies in these types of structures are really in the B2B setting. as you mentioned. Now, if we look at the industrial ecosystems that you are referring here, then of course they come with a lot of constraints. So first of all, they have the legacy systems, and they have a lot of physical assets that probably have been super, super expensive. Yeah, and if you have, if these have been written off, so you don't have any extra costs, then of course the incentive to now invest into totally new infrastructure, you know, can just not be there because it's too expensive and it wouldn't work within sort of your business sort of environment. Costs are too high and so on. And also the industrial ecosystems, they depend on, you know, strong trust structures between the different players. And they also depend on sort of certain ideas of moving slowly or not, you know, sometimes the platforms, they are owned by companies and they're totally sort of, you know, just built for that particular setting. So you don't want to open them up to the rest of the world because your business model depends on everyone, you know, having to connect to you. And it, of course, depends on, you know, the strengths and what role you have in a particular ecosystem. But if we look at the, you know, especially in Germany at the, you know, Maschinenbau, they're not that keen, you know, to the surprise even of political regulators in this regard. But having said that, of course, they're also recognizing that, you know, if new technologies such as AI are giving them a competitive advantage, you know, they're super smart and they will sort of, you know, do it, but not the full load, but they will do it very specifically where they actually do gain benefits. And I think, I mean, we saw this in the past, as you rightly said, and I think we will also be seeing this moving forward.
If I may chime in, Sabine, and follow up.
Yes, of course.
Sounds to me like a path dependency issue. And how would you, you know, situate the path dependency, like you have a locked in trajectory, you have a new technology, you are maybe reluctant to adopt it fully. Would you think that the mechanical engineering or whatever industry structure in Germany would kind of be in some way, shapes or form, hinder the adoption of specific technologies?
I'm not 100% sure it's a full path dependency issue. It can be in certain instances, but in others, I mean, it's just smart to stay in your niche. Especially, you know, if you're looking at the margins they're sort of getting. But it's very hard to say. It's not an either or case because it also depends on what your position in an ecosystem actually is. So I don't know, probably like 6 years or so. We wrote a paper that looked at positioning of players and ecosystems. We specifically looked at small to medium-sized companies, and they sort of can essentially do two strategies. So one is to have a very generic technology, and the other one is to really stay in your niche and to be a specialty provider. And when we think in terms of ecosystems, you know, the generic strategy, of course, gives you an opportunity to be part of many different ecosystems and then sort of leverage your capacity. Problem is, though, you can also be easily replaced. And so it's not this either or thing. It really depends, you know, what it is you're providing in terms of, you know, your product and service offering. And then sort of you can look at what a good strategy could be. Yeah? And for many, you know, companies, you know, it does make a lot of sense to stay in their, you know, in their niche because that's where their business is. But you're quite right. I mean, this could change. And if they miss the right moment by staying on their old path, you know, they could be in trouble. But right now, I mean, I don't think it's this, we hinder this because we're not seeing the opportunity. Hinder this because we know exactly it's good business the way it is.
Path dependency, I would also like think in a way that Brian Arthur conceptualized it as something like a sort of the state now shapes the state, like T equals zero shapes the state mm-hmm. and T plus one, that kind of, yeah. And maybe to different extents. That's super interesting. Do you think, or can ones, I really like the discussion about the relevance of the context and the nuance. Because I think this is something extremely important. As we Absolutely. Discussed, sometimes certain papers focus on a subgroup of platforms that have specific characteristics, which is fine, right? But we cannot make general claims, especially not from B2C to B2B and so on. I think B2B becomes, as far as I see, Philip's PhD was focusing on B2B platforms and ecosystems and business strategy. There's a bunch of different imperatives that you need to consider there. And I think this nuance is something that's super valuable also for the listeners, especially those who are a bit younger mm-hmm. and starting with the platform economics and ecosystem economics. That's very valuable.
When I started my research, that was, when was it? 2017, 18. I think this is when I got interested. I worked at a German automotive company at the time and had the chance to build a like an internal marketplace for 3D printing capacity. So the idea was to connect the 3D printers on the one side and engineers in the company on the other side and help the engineers place 3D printing orders to, in a way, bring the technology forward inside the company. That was the idea. And that's how I got interested in B2B platforms, because I at the time was also then reading Jeff Parker and Anna Bergauer and their works. And what I experienced back then was that many, especially manufacturing firms, we had Siemens with MindSphere, we had Trumpf with Axum, in Germany were really jumping on this, we need to build a platform train. Coming to my question, thinking about a hype cycle, like in the Gartner hype cycle ideology, Sabine, where do you see this platform topic, like from a business context right now? I think back at the time, it was really on the surge to being at the hype. So where do you see it, the platform topic right now in industry?
I mean, platforms, first of all, it's an old topic. Yeah, and it has always been there, but it had sort of a peak, just in the time frame that you mentioned. I think the sort of more novel sort of setting is sort of this idea of business ecosystems or digital business ecosystems. If we move to the digital realm, and there the difference is that a lot of these digital business ecosystems have a platform, a technological platform at the core, but that doesn't have to be the case. And I think what happened sort of when we had the hype for the platform is that at some point we realized that we may be overlooking something if we just focus entirely on the platform side. But I'm not sure the hype is completely over. If we're looking at research, it's again, you know, there's different ways this is sort of investigated. And then, of course, platform is not, you know, in one context, it's not necessarily the platform, in the other. So what you describe for automotive, you know, these internal platforms to try out a new technology quite often sort of miss the incentives system behind this. Yeah. So it's the same with every technology. Just to have the technology doesn't mean it's actually going to be used or that it will be working unless it does make sense. So if it doesn't create value, or if it creates value but you cannot capture it, then of course you don't have any interest in participating.
Totally, 100%. I think you hit a nail on the head with that. So we may be sharing a few insights. We struggled a bit to generate the necessary traction, especially in the beginning. And I think one of the major challenges was that the potential value gain for the more important quote unquote site, which was the providers of the 3D printers, wasn't really there. So they had their own like little kingdoms. This is how it was called. They were the owners of the knowledge, the owners of the calendar, the owners of the resource, the printers, a scarce resource. And now the platform came around the corner and was like, okay, now we want you to be transparent about your schedule. We want third-party engineers to like push in their part orders automatically, and you will basically lose a lot of power over the field. And you gain, not so much, sorry, right? Yeah. And that was a problem. And I saw similar approaches to the platform topic also then like beyond one organization. I think in the early days in B2B platforms in the manufacturing context, I think builders of platforms, without naming individual companies, they forgot a bit about implementing the right incentive structure and thinking about, okay, how do I now get particularly the more scarce side really, really invested in what I'm doing and adding benefit to what they're doing, right?
Yeah. And if I may add to this, I think something that is really vital when thinking about platforms is network effects. And so you always need to be able to build this critical mass. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't thought about this, then, you know, things will become really, really difficult. And this can be very cost intensive also, you know, to get the critical mass here. Yeah, and the saying of just build it, they will come. I mean, this completely doesn't work in the context of platforms.
Absolutely. And if I may add to this, is that, Philip, you mentioned a lot of, I think, understanding of platforms in terms of to inform business strategy and kickstarting a platform and these things. A lot of research, in my perception, is also driven by understanding platforms or multi-layered ecosystems of platforms, which we see, because we have a bunch of regulatory questions. And we try to understand them, try to understand the interdependencies within and across these ecosystems, contestability, right? So I think there's a bunch of different angles and also vantage points to understand these platforms and the mechanisms. And one is maybe more informing the actor as such. Others are more like for the regulators, which, if I may shift to the topic of dependencies and interdependencies, big topics in various, I think, ways at the moment. And maybe also something like resilience. When I know it's not a black and white, it's not a yes, no answer, but thinking about digital business ecosystems, would, with AI becoming more pervasively and more deeply embedded, a lot of stuff is becoming more fluid, resources can be mixed and matched more agile, or the mix and matching becomes more agile. Where do you think firms, for example, face specific trade-offs, you know, they need to resolve in terms of, let's say, resilience or fragility? And maybe you can contextualize this with a few examples, because also here, I think the answers are very different across different use cases.
Yeah, that's totally true. So for one thing, I think we should also note that we do have transaction costs in in ecosystems and also for operating platforms. And so when you're talking about trade-offs and interdependencies, again, we have to think on, you know, where's the benefit for me as a company? So is this part of my business model? Can I get extra business, for instance? And what are the costs involved in getting this? Or what do I have to give up? So if you're sharing data, sometimes there's sort of data that is sort of proprietary to your business model and that you just don't want to share. Obvious reasons. And so there's different layers or categories of data that, you know, you may end up being willing to share or not. And that, of course, constrains on, you know, how you will operate sort of the interactions with other players in the ecosystem. The earlier example I had about SMEs sort of in manufacturing ecosystems is a good example about positioning and also the question of value capture. Yeah, and I think if we also look at research, that's an area that is still underdeveloped. We talk about a lot about value creation, but not about the incentive structure that derives from how the value or who captures the value in the ecosystem. So it's a bit like when you go hunting, very successful, and then some big guy comes along and takes whatever you've just hunted. Well, takes the fun out of doing what you're doing. So it again, very old topics about, value appropriation in these settings. With the approach of ecosystems, they become more complex because you're looking at the different actors, you're looking at the dependency, and one dependency might be, how able are you to appropriate the value that is being created, for yourself to make your being part of this particular business system viable. And that's a big and interesting thing. And then another aspect that I find quite interesting is also to look at time. So the growth of business ecosystem and how they evolve over time. I mean, if we want to put it a bit more provocative, I mean, the issue is not about building the ecosystem. The issue is about scaling it and also to make it sustainable and survive in the long run and also, viable for all the players in that ecosystem.
Yeah, I think to the resilience and interdependency topic, if we're talking about SMEs, then I think we usually talk about either complementers or users of platforms or in ecosystems, not so much or rarely about like the orchestrator or the focal firm. And then for a digital platform or digital ecosystem to be, let's say, viable, it often is an all or nothing decision for an SME, right? Either I really bring my processes on the platform. If we talk about manufacturing firms, either I bring all my factories and all the connected devices on this one platform, or I don't. And then one example I brought in my thesis is that to try this out, if you are trying out a new platform as a private person, you just download an app on your smartphone, you log in, maybe you share your email address, you try it, and then you delete it again. Right? As a company, to gain or to experience the full value, you really have to be all in, and then you're dependent.
You might be betting your company. And another issue is, of course, resources. Your daily business might take up all the resources that you have. And so it's also sometimes harder to explore, what is out there.
Sabine, we already talked about your upcoming book that you edited, Value Co-Creation in Digital Platforms and Business Ecosystems. We're going to link it in the in the show notes. It's currently available for pre-order. And as we have a general opening question, we also have a general closing question, which is, what are you working on right now? What are you working on next? So what's coming next after the book? I think this is a big achievement.
Thank you.
I'm curious to hear what's coming next.
But like with books, the big work, is a little some time back. You're already probably guessing one of the area I'm working in is really looking at about older research streams and thinking about what they have to or what we can still learn from traditional scholars. So one area, one of these scholars is Bomol, another is Rosen, who, talked about the superstar economy. And of course, if we're looking at platforms, one interesting question is also how these superstar economics operate in these settings. So why is it that quite often we talked about the winner takes all or almost all markets, on how does this play out in digital settings? And again, the old mechanisms still hold in general, but the implementation is sort of slightly different, and so we can learn a lot in that arena. And another thing that I'm quite interested in the context of media is willingness to pay for non-AI created content. And that's something, we can maybe touch on in another podcast at this, but also that's quite an intriguing and not an easy question to answer on what is sort of happening in those particular markets here. And then besides sort of the older scholars, the second direction is really empirical work to look at ecosystems, and especially, I talked about the timing of ecosystems. So to see what's happening in a nascent phase, what's happening in a more mature phase, and what, a bit like a life cycle, so to say.
Yeah, it sounds all fascinating and intersects with also, I mean, personally, my some of my research projects, I have to say. So we should certainly continue discussing and also encourage folks, listeners to reach out with you, I guess, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd love that.
Thank you so much, Sabine. It was super, super enlightening. I really appreciated these different perspectives on these topics and the call for more nuanced analysis, right? When we talk about platforms and ecosystem. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Talking About Platforms.
You can rate the podcast on every major podcast app. This helps us a lot in growing.
Visit talkingaboutplatforms.com to get the links of the short notes, reach out to us, and see the previous episodes.
Hear you in another episode to talk about platforms.